The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's going on, everyone? It is game day. We are getting ready for the start of a new month. Will it be as successful as the month of November was for San Jose? We will find out over the next 31 days. But to talk about everything going on with the San Jose Sharks, we are now joined by Max Miller of NHL.com and San Jose Hockey Now. Max, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Good, Ted. Good to be back home after a game away in Vegas.
Does that mean you lost the house? You're back. You're glad to be back from Vegas?
I would have lost the house if I went to Vegas. I'm just happy to watch some hockey in person.
Right on, man. Well, we've got some news to get into with the San Jose Sharks this morning. It was announced that Pavel Regenda was being called up. Vinny Deharnais going to IR. And I think a lot of Sharks fans were relatively surprised because they maybe would have expected that a Quentin Musty or an Igor Chernyshov would have been coming up, or, you know, you can say a Cardwell or Giles or other names as well. But, you know, the Sharks have done a pretty good job of implementing Barracuda players onto their first team roster up to this point of the season. So your reactions, A, and then B, I know you said head coach Ryan Warsofsky talked about this a bit.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, look, if you remember back from training camp, Pavel Regina had a terrific training camp and preseason. Fortunately, he didn't make it. Got off to a little bit of a slow start at the Barracuda, but he's rolling now, just like the rest of the team. The whole team got off to a slow start. When it comes to, you know, if the guy deserves it and he played well and he fits the role, which Regina does, then so be it. And while you could group in a Giles or a Cardwell a little bit closer to Regina, for the Musty and Chernyshov crowd, even Warsofsky, like you mentioned, said, you know, part of the thinking of calling up Pavel Regenda is the role he's going to play. He's going to play with Ryan Reeves, Barclay Goodrow on the fourth line. Goody will go back to the center position. So he's excited to play with them. Excuse me. And then, like, if you're Igor Chernyshov or Quentin Musty, do you want them to come in the NHL for a limited amount of time because Meeson and Skinner are almost back? Deharnais goes on IR. He's missing tonight, Wednesday. Doesn't sound like it's too long term. You need a forward. Why not give the guy who earned it, who can fit that role, a look and give him a little bit of power play time? You don't, if you're calling up Musty and Chernyshov, you want them to play and play in a role where they can be successful, not play in a fourth line grind it out role for two games and then go back down to the Barracuda. And part of the thinking of Regenda is that exact reason. So I like the call up. The guy's earned it. And I think he fits a need the Sharks want. And I'm okay with Goodrow going back to the middle. He showed the foot speed to be able to do it.
And one of the things that I've appreciated about what the Barracuda and the Sharks have done is they're bringing up guys, and like you alluded to, keeping them in that same role. Like, you don't want to have Musty and Chernyshov grinding away on a third or fourth line situation. And I think that's why they've had success with the Giles or the Cardwell coming up or Ostapchuk. I did want to ask about the roster, though, because we know that Gaudette is a game time decision due to illness. So, you know, is there any chance that they could be looking at 11-7 situation, or do we still just kind of have to wait and see?
Well, I think Gaudette's going to play. Okay. I'm not 100% sure. Every other forward was on the ice. Warsofsky said that there's a bunch of guys who are game time decisions. While we do have to believe him, we don't know who the other guys are other than Adam Gaudette, who is sick. And it's just that time of year. You know, yeah. Toffoli was sick last week. Gaudette's sick this week. There's a bug going around. I know, I think it was Nyland or someone missed a game for an illness around the NHL. It's just that time of year, right? We're in December now. If he doesn't play, then they will be forced to go 11-7, and then either Vinny Iorio or Nick Leddy will come into the game. Those two were on the ice late with Misa and Skinner, who were with the team this morning but will not play. But they, you know, there's no space for them to be activated, so you can't put them in. And I don't think there was a plan to even put them in, even if you know, there were technical options. They just got back today. So I believe Gaudette's going to play, but there's no way of knowing until one moves.
So the other thing that you mentioned there that I want to bring up is both Misa and Skinner being back on the ice. That is a positive development for San Jose. Were there any updates given in terms of their respective timelines? Because I know previously it was said that Skinner was ahead of where Misa was, but if they're coming back on the ice at the same time, A, that's just a good sign in general, and B, maybe the 18-year-old heals up a little faster than the guy in his 30s.
Yeah, I think that might be the case a little bit here. It's also, I mean, Misa got hurt first as well. So maybe it was a different injury and it just synced up. I mean, on Friday, they said Misa caught up, but he was only 24 hours behind Skinner. But they got on the ice alone, you know, working on their own on the ice and the rehab ice at the same time. The plan has always been to hope to get them to back on practice on Tuesday. So I think getting them in around the team today was a good thing. They were on the ice late, like I said before. So they've been upgraded to just day to day at this point. They're going to practice tomorrow. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. I think it'll be interesting if Pavel Rogenda goes down on Tuesday and or another player gets hurt and they have another roster spot. I believe based on just the way they're talking about it, Skinner would be activated before Misa, but you never know, especially since the Sharks have a pretty solid depth down the middle where you can move Goody down the middle, Cadet can play down the middle. DeLandre's really taken it by storm. And they've shown they've wanted to keep Michael Misa at center whenever he's been in the lineup, as you hear they're practicing the court here at SAP Center.
It's interesting that the Sharks have had as much success as they had up to this year without Michael Misa, because I think a lot of fans probably felt in training camp that if the Sharks were going to take steps forward, it would be with Misa being in a relatively starring role, but he hasn't. And I think that just speaks to a little bit of that depth at forward that maybe I don't think any of us were truly expecting, because I think that we didn't know what was there until we could see it in front of our eyes. And obviously, you know, it's relatively early in the season, but I think watching, you know, Kurashev have his starting role for a bit there. Gaudette, he's taken his turn having a little bit of a star role. We've watched the quality play of Reeves and Goodrow, who looks better than he did a year ago. And you've watched Will Smith get hot as of late. William Eklund's gotten hot as of late. Macklin Celebrini's been doing his thing. I guess the one guy that everyone's waiting for is Tyler Toffoli. And he seemed frustrated last night after he had a chance to tie late against Vegas, wasn't able to get it on frame, which I don't think that's anything to really worry about. I think that those are the craziest situations. You're just trying to get a shot off. If it goes in, it goes in. But, you know, I'm trying to figure out Toffoli. I know that he has not acknowledged any injury. Ryan Warsowski alluded to it a little bit. What have you seen in his game?
Yeah, the other guy with the depth that I know I want him to give him his fire as well as Ty DeLandre. He's really solidified that 3C role, and that's what's provided a lot of the depth is allow the Gaudettes, the Kurashevs, those guys to really have their moment, because DeLandre has really solidified himself as a solid 3C. When it comes to Toffoli, I think he's getting healthier. The last two games, he's got some more jump. He's getting those chances against Vegas. I mean, tough break. You saw his reaction. He puts his head up. You know, he looks to the skies. I think Hanifin got a stick on it. So it's just that's a look. You're just hustling. You're not trying to, you know, I got to get it out. You're just throwing it at the net. I think he's getting healthier. He was sick, so that definitely was part of the issue too. So I think just resting up a little bit. He's a veteran. He knows how to take care of himself. Scores are streaky, and I haven't seen anything where he, you know, you could say Father Time's catching up. So I think I also don't think he's needed as much to provide that goal scoring with what Macklin's doing, what Will's doing, and Eklund's picking it up and Kurashev. And he's not, you know, playing, you know, 18, 20 minutes a night. He's playing closer to probably 16, right? Like he isn't always on PP1 right now. And sure, some of that is injury and maybe struggle related, but those chances that we've come accustomed to him scoring are starting to show up. And it's only a matter of time before he starts putting them in the net.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. And Tyler Toffoli was such a great acquisition last year for this team, and I think he still is a great acquisition. It's just kind of, it's surprising, but I think it speaks to the nature of the NFL. It's like, or excuse me, the NHL. Sometimes it takes one goal to see a guy get rolling. Like you saw the juxtaposition of Toffoli putting his head up in frustration and Eklund putting his head up and saying, finally, after he scored two games ago. That's just life in the National Hockey League. It's not, you know, even established goal scorers, they still go through their droughts. And that's another thing that's been interesting to me is that the Sharks' power play has looked better than the last two games, and it looked pretty bad for a bit there, even though they had scored goals in three consecutive games heading into that game against Colorado. It was just off. Against Colorado, they got shut out, but the power play looked more cohesive, and that bled over into the next couple games. So it's interesting to watch a failure of a game like Colorado, and I say that loosely because Colorado is on another level right now. They are just, I know their streak ended, but wow, I think that speaks for itself. But they clearly figured something out, and they were able to have more extended time against Vancouver, multiple chances in the Ozone, and that carried over into that game against Vegas, where you could see, okay, they're starting to figure it out. So what are you seeing on the power play right now?
Yeah, I think it's definitely better. I'm seeing more of that downhill mentality, that get the pucks to the net mentality. They've started recovering pucks better. That's the biggest thing that they've done is recover pucks better. And I think that was step one in fixing the power play, because when they would get shots, which weren't enough of them, they weren't able to get it back, so they dump it down. And their entries have been solid. I mean, this entire time, even through the struggles, it doesn't matter if it's Orlov, Klingberg, Celebrini, whoever's taking the puck up the ice, the entries have been pretty solid for the most part. Shooting the puck has been more, I want to see a little bit more playmaking, right? That sounds counterintuitive of what I just said, where they need to shoot the puck more. But now they're kind of just firing pucks a little bit, getting trigger happy. Now you need to find the balance of that. It's tough because you know, you want to shoot the puck and create chaos, but you want to make plays. I think they're a little bit too far on the side of creating chaos, but I feel like that's okay right now because I think the skill of the team of Eklund and Celebrini and Smith, once they kind of control that chaos, that will take over and it'll be a beautiful combination. So if you stay on this mentality of creating chaos, you can start creating chaos for more than just shots, but also plays. You just can't get in the habit of finding the perfect play. And I think it also speaks volumes. There was, I think, a game or two there where Will Smith was pulled off the first power play unit. Part of that is just because I think Smith and Celebrini almost look for each other a little bit too much at times. I thought on Friday against whoever they, I can't even remember
Vancouver.
They Friday. Vancouver.
I know the schedule's been crazy, Max. I was another V team. Who'd they play?
Yeah, so against Vancouver, I thought Celebrini tried to pass off to Smith a couple of times too much when he was in shooting positions. It's just what they do. They've always done that. It's a message they send to them. They've gotten a lot better at it. But I think sometimes they can feel like, oh, we got the space. Let's have some fun. Let's create a play, which you can do in certain situations. You just can't get tunnel vision on it. And that's gotten better since Smith's return to the first unit. And Klingberg will go back to the top unit today. We'll see how that goes. I wouldn't be – you know, what's funny is – you can't go back to last year, but and nothing against John Klingberg, but if you swap a Mikhail Granlund for the point man instead of John Klingberg, I think that's a terrific power play unit. And that just speaks volumes to how good Mikhail Granlund was at doing that for this team for 2 years.
No, it's interesting. And, you know, with Klingberg, I know that he's obviously been dealing with injury for the last couple of years. And like, I keep on seeing essences that he's close to kind of turning the corner to being who he used to be, because at first I was like, okay, does he have his legs under him? And I feel like, yes, he does now at this point, but I feel like sometimes his angles and his timing are still just a little bit off. And because I feel like lately he's been moving pretty well, but I just feel like he's still trying to regather himself. And obviously, you know, you get the double hip resurfacing. That's a major thing to recover from. And I would imagine he's still in the process of trying to get his body to do what he wants it to do. That doesn't change overnight. You have to deal with that.
Yeah, and I don't want to be the negative person to bring it down, but there's also part of it is that's, you know, can his body do what he wants it to do to the fullest extent anymore? You can see the instincts are there. Those haven't left at all. And I think the timing and the speed of the game has only gone up. And with, like you said, how much that he's played, just a little, like, that'll take time for him to get used to that speed. And I've seen it to some extent. I think defending, he's gotten a little bit better lately. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing for me with Klingberg is the breakouts. I just think sometimes he tries to make too much of a play. The last few games, I've seen him get pucks out, you know, chip it out a lot better and have the forecheck go get it. You can see that change in him. It's starting to go there. And I think for him at this stage of his career, he needs to do that because I just don't know if he has that foot speed and hip and leg speed really to be able to make those plays where he can, you know, if he turns a puck over, he can quickly get back into position and recollect it and make a play to, you know, figure out his turnover. I think if he turns the puck over, he's realizing, oh crap, I don't have this time anymore. And then when he tries to do it, I just don't know if he can. Maybe he gets to that point, you know, that's the hope. He's also 33. So he's been around the block, and I'm starting to see a shift to where I think he can find a combination of the game the Sharks want him to play with that chip and chase and not always making plays, because you just can't, especially in the second periods. You cannot just try to make a play through the neutral zone. Those gray areas on each blue line are just deathly. So I've seen it better the last few games from him, and I want to continue to see it. The power play, I think with him, it got swapped on it last game, looked better. I want to see them score tonight, and I don't want to see a John Klingberg one-timer, because every time they've scored a power play with him on there, he scored on a one-timer from point, which is great. Yeah. I just want to see him facilitate it a little bit more, and I think that also means more work ethic of facilitating and creating plays from the John Klingberg point passes from the wingers.
While we're on the blue liner topic, with Dickinson as well as Mook Medul, and I want to get your thoughts, and there was an interesting play the other night where I believe it was Marner who had the wraparound who got Nedeljkovic to bite on the near post and then went backside, and everyone thinks, oh, okay, Nedeljkovic bit hard on that, which he did, but I think that was one instance where Mook Medul is used to his longer stick being more of a stopping power, and it was like, well, that's not going to work always. And he needed to be a little bit more aggressive in that instance. Whereas sometimes with Dickinson, I've seen him be a little bit too aggressive and he'll bite too hard. So it's interesting watching young players kind of trying to figure it out, because we talk so much about defensemen. It has such a steeper learning curve than it does for forwards. I mean, forwards, it's pretty much learn how to play defense in addition to playing offense, learning how to play away from the puck. But, you know, with the blue liner's responsibilities, I just feel like there's such a steep curve for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it takes like 200 games for them to really define who they are, and sometimes more. I think Mukko Madulin is dealing with a bit of a confidence thing right now. I think there's a lot of players here that are playing well, and Mukko Madulin just, you know, hasn't played to his fullest extent. I think, you know, you look at last season and just how good he got after the first half of the year. I think he's figuring things out. I think he's thinking a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's young, and Sam Dickinson is going, and when he gets too aggressive, he notices it, recognizes it, and kind of goes into a shell a little bit. So there's two sides to every coin. You have a guy who you need to see be a little bit more aggressive, and you can see him starting to do it, and you see those wheels, and it's just kind of one-off mistakes. But those one-off mistakes happen a couple times a game, where Wadulin has those one-off mistakes, and Dickinson kind of has mistakes pile on top of each other, and that just shows the age. So they're both in the lineup. They're paired tonight. I'm interested to see how they play, and I think this style of game that they're going to play against Utah will feed both of their confidence really well.
No, it'll be interesting. I'm very curious because this Utah team, I think they have the ability to be very dangerous. They're not what they were in the start of the year, but I still think they are a very, very dangerous team to deal with. We've got Askarov in net again today, and I was looking at his numbers for the month of November, and it's a little bit silly, Max. And I mean that in the best way. It's just like you look at these numbers that he put up, the save percentages, 947, 967, 974, 966, 971, 923, 912, 971, 789. That's the Colorado game.
But it was a good 789.
Yeah. And then back up to 941, which, like you said, that 789 doesn't tell you that he kept it from being an absolute blowout in the first period. But I mean, even with the 79 in there or 789 in there, that's an absurd, I would imagine, near historic month in the NHL. I mean, just for a guy who, what, had 14 starts entering this year in the NHL? I mean, I know it's probably not, but I feel that for a short-term, one-month timeline, that's, at least as a Shark, that's one of the best we've ever seen.
Yeah, that is for sure one of the best we've ever seen. You know, I was bummed. I really wanted him to get that 10th win in November. That would have matched, I think, Nabokov or passed him, one of those two, and there's your history right there. But I mean, those numbers are insane, especially from the start that he had, right? We saw a flash of it against New Jersey, and then he had the clunker against LA. And from that clunker, it's been absurdity, confidence, and just
Dude,
ridiculous
Max,
play
I'll
from
interrupt. You
Askarov.
Remember how pissed he was after that game against LA?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the anti-ASCII. Like, that was like the complete other end of the personality that we never see. He was steaming after that game. And like you said, yeah, it's just since that point, he's been incredible.
Yeah, I think sometimes you got to almost bottom out, if you will, right? Like he had such a tough start. He was thinking, and the biggest thing that I would preach on Shark Hockey Digest, NHL tweets, whatever you want to call it, was look, this kid is 23, had 14 starts in the NHL and made his first opening night roster and has a guy who is supposed to be his backup playing better than him in the preseason. The guy's going to try and force his way into being a number one instead of just playing the game in front of him. And I think after a lot of struggles and good communication, and he even told me too, like it's just day by day, right? Like, I asked him, is this the most confident you've played in your pro career? And he said, I don't even know because I'm not thinking about that. I'm just taking it as day by day. And I think that is huge. I said, well, is that something you think of? He said, no, that's just what the coaching staff is telling me. It's something they tell everybody. But I think from Thomas Speer especially, like it shows the Sharks are believing in him. You can't think about this big picture. And I just think that moment he needed to bottom out and was like, I'm forcing it too much. I had a terrible game. Here's what I need to work on one step at a time. And from that moment, he has been, I'm going to take this game and play this game. I'm going to take this practice and play this practice. And that has helped him so much. He's smiling. It's not like he wasn't even smiling in the locker room, even when he was struggling. He was in the NHL having fun. I just think bottoming out and really just having a wake-up call, right? Some guys talk about, you know, you need a kick in the butt or a pat on the back. I think he needed a pat on the back, and I think he got it. I think he got it. And I walk in the locker room today to talk to Pavel Regenda, who's next to Askarov, and he goes, oh, hey, Max, good to see you today. And just his light, he's fun, he's happy, he's good, and he's confident. But when it comes to game time, he's locked in. He's in the zone. And you see that personality come out, but not even between the whistles. It's before the game, in the morning, his personality is out. And if they win after the game, even post game, it's out. But you see that he's locked in game time. He's an ultimate competitor.
Just as the last one for you, what do you make of this game tonight? That's 1-1 on the season series.
Yeah, it should be fun. Look, I think the Sharks really match up well against Utah. It's just their rush. The Sharks are really good at defending the rush and counterattacking. They have guys who really have that quick up, especially I think their 2-1-2 forecheck really does a good job disrupting because the breakout pushes higher out for Utah. And if the Sharks get it in the D zone, they're going to get a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 down low. And that is huge. So forecheck tonight is going to be huge for the Sharks. Obviously, Askarov and then Vemelko. So we'll have two right-handed catching goalies tonight here at SAP Center. That'll be fun to watch. Logan Cooley skated, so good to see him there. Clayton Keller, obviously, you know, thoughts and prayers to him and everything his family's going through. It's so sad to hear, you know, about his father passing away suddenly. But look, that Utah's got a good team. Same record for the Sharks. if these teams want to make the next step, Utah wants to get in the playoffs, you got to win this game, not just in general, but in regulation. This is a division game. You must win it in regulation if you want to get in the playoffs, especially when you're playing a team with the exact same record. Doesn't matter if it's December 1st or April 1st. You have to win this game in regulation if you want to make the playoffs.
Max, appreciate your time as always. Keep up the great work, man, and I will see you in a few hours.
Awesome. See you in a few hours.
Again, that is Max Miller of NHL.com. The Sharks take on Utah tonight, 6:30 pre, 7 o'clock go time, right here on the Sharks Audio Network. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.